This is the biggest negative shock that our economy, I think, has ever seen.
Over 8.5 million jobs are being lost in the United States about every 10 days. We explore what lies ahead. This is Tuesday, the 28th of April, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, more than 1 million Australians are now tracking COVID-19. You'll hear more about how the virus pandemic has affected the relationship between the United States and China. We talked to a prominent Asian American spokesman about the 60-day immigration ban declared by the U.S. president. And you'll hear the story of a possible new four-legged furry hero of the pandemic. And it is not your dog. It is all on today's VOA Asia. A few U.S. states have cautiously eased restrictions, opening retail stores and hair salons. More states will reopen their businesses in the coming weeks. Many state officials are feeling the strain the pandemic's lockdown has placed on their economies, and they're looking to the federal government for funding in another stimulus package. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the story.
After weeks of being on lockdown, unemployment levels are skyrocketing. Even businesses that remain open are hurting. The U.S. economy is experiencing impacts of historic proportions, says White House senior advisor and economist Kevin Hassett.
This is the biggest negative shock that our economy, I think, has ever seen. We're going to be looking at an unemployment rate that approaches rates that we saw during the Great Depression.
Hassett says 8.7 million jobs were lost in the 2008 financial crisis. Now the U.S. is seeing that many jobs being lost almost every 10 days. States are facing a financial strain, having to provide for growing unemployment benefits and facing a decrease in tax revenue due to closed businesses. Many governors are advocating for Congress to include funding to states in the next stimulus package.
We're on the front lines. We've taken all these actions. We've got to provide these necessary services to help people get back on their feet. It's critical to the rebounding of our economy.
But many Republicans, as well as White House economists, caution taking on more federal debt after already providing well over $2 trillion in stimulus funding.
Yeah, I think that as we go into the next phase of legislation, we need to think about long-run things that we can do to try to get ahead of the curve on debt. So for sure, we need to do still some short-run things, but I think looking at long-run changes that we can make to things to improve the debt situation, you know, that should be something that should be on the table.
Aside from the debate heating up for the next stimulus package, public health experts, as well as governors and lawmakers in some states, say there needs to be more testing before the economy completely reopens.
We need to be able to test people at double the rate so that our meatpacking plants in Minnesota, the food processing plants in Minnesota and in the Midwest are able to reopen. We're going to have trouble with our food supply chain.
We have to have community tracing. We've got to have a plan for isolation for people that do get tested positive for COVID-19 in the future. And as we think about re-engaging sectors of our economy, really analyzing the risk associated with a particular sector, scoring that risk, determining what protocols need to be in place.
State governors and lawmakers in Congress will not only have to balance the health and safety of people with the economy damage done in a continued lockdown, they will also have to navigate the political fight that is looming in Washington as they discuss the next stimulus package in the backdrop of a presidential election just a few months away. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Hong Kong riot police armed with shields dispersed a crowd of 300 pro-democracy activists holding a singing protest in an upmarket shopping mall on Sunday, despite a ban on public gatherings of more than 4 people. The bodies of 2 South Korean trekkers who have been missing since being swamped by an avalanche in Nepal's Himalayan mountains earlier this year have been found. Afghanistan civilians continue to die in high numbers, more than 500 in the first quarter of 2020, despite the signing of a deal between the United States and Taliban to end hostilities, according to a UN report released Monday. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. More than a million Australians have downloaded a coronavirus contact tracing app within hours of it being released by the government. Officials have said the technology would help Australia get back to normal and help lift restrictions, but it's been criticized by civil liberties groups. Australia has managed to control its coronavirus outbreak, but officials worry about the risk of another flare-up. There are 6,713 confirmed COVID-19 infections in Australia. 83 people have died. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
It's vital to know quickly if you've come in contact with someone who has tested positive for coronavirus. It's why we've introduced the COVID Safe app.
The Australian government says the voluntary app will help to save lives. It's designed to enable health officials to trace people potentially exposed to COVID-19. Smartphone users who download the app will be notified if they've had contact with another user who's tested positive for coronavirus. It uses Bluetooth signals to log when people have been close to one another. Officials believe it could help to trace undiagnosed COVID-19 infections. They've insisted the data will only be used by state health authorities. Australia's chief medical officer is Brendan Murphy.
No Australian should have any concerns about downloading this app. It is only for one purpose, to help contact tracing if someone becomes positive. I think Australians will rise to the challenge because they have risen to the challenge of distancing, they've risen to the challenge of testing.
The COVID Safe app is based on software used in Singapore. But civil liberties campaigners say it's an invasion of privacy. Pauline Wright from the Law Council of Australia says data protection safeguards are needed.
If there are problems, then people need to have the assurance that it will be overseen by an independent authority.
The government wants at least 40% of Australians, roughly 10 million people, to sign up to make the COVID-19 digital tracking measure effective. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, South Korean officials are emphasizing that they have detected no unusual movement in North Korea, and they're cautioning against reports that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un may be ill or is being isolated because of the coronavirus concerns. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. The COVID-19 pandemic has had some serious political and economic implications when it comes to the U.S. relationship with China. VOA's Lori London talked about it with David Feierstein, president and CEO of the George H.W. Bush Foundation for U.S.-China Relations, in this two-part interview about the future relationship from the two world powers and about the foundation's newly established U.S.-China Coronavirus Action Network.
I think there is a qualitative difference between this pandemic in terms of its impact on U.S.-China relations and really any other episode or event that has occurred in the relationship, at least from a U.S. perspective. And the big difference is that whereas, you know, China has often done things that the United States doesn't like or that is seen as problematic from the standpoint of U.S. interests, and also the reverse is true, the U.S. often does things that Chinese see as problematic or antithetical to their interests. In this particular instance, there is a narrative in this country that has really taken hold, certainly in Washington, and I think seemingly increasingly across the country, judging by public opinion polls, that China has done something bad with respect to its handling of COVID-19 and the early epidemic, now pandemic, and that what China has done has hurt America in ways that we've never seen before, and even taken American life to the tune of potentially thousands or obviously tens of thousands now. However one might allocate the varying elements of responsibility, the fact is, you know, tens of thousands of Americans so far have died from this virus. And I think there are people in this country that believe that, again, in their view, China somehow unleashed this on us in a sinister way. So I think the mindset, largely on the Republican side, but also we see some of these comments from both Republicans and Democrats. You know, there's this sense that China has really done something it's never done before, and that it has struck a blow not only to the U.S. economy, because that allegation and that assertion has been out there for decades, but now to American life itself. That makes this different than previous shocks to the system when it comes to U.S.-China relations.
Whether or not China did something intentionally or not, what economic ramifications will the perceptions have in the future for the U.S. and China?
I think the most immediate or maybe profound impact, I think, is going to be on how the United States thinks about supply chains. And obviously, the degree of integration between the United States and China that has developed over the last several decades, and which has still been very substantial even during the 3 years plus of the Trump administration, I think that is now seen by more Americans as problematic and risky, an undue level of dependence on the part of the United States toward China and its economy. And I think that there is an emerging view in this country, and it was a view that I think was not as widely held up until COVID-19, but it's a view that the United States needs to scale back its presence in China. It needs to depend less on China economically, in terms of supply chain, in terms of perhaps even being a source of consumption of U.S. goods and services. That is one of the most profound emerging impacts, I think, from the COVID-19 situation. A lot of people are saying, look, we need to start not just, quote, producing here, making America great again by making things in America again, but to go further and say we need to really have our own supply chain capacity, our own ability to supply our industrial production processes, pharmaceuticals, and so on, either domestically or from countries other than China. So I think that in this particular regard, for those who kind of ideologically over these past 3 years or so have said, you know, we need to have sort of an America first mindset and, you know, reduce our dependency on China, I think the COVID-19 gives them some ammunition to take to the American public and try to sell that argument with a greater sense of urgency than they were able to do before.
In your view, is it a good thing to pull away and go in that direction?
No, I don't think it is. It's not a good thing for the United States. And that's the main prism through which I look at these issues. I think it's a bad idea, not because it's bad for China, but because it's bad for us in a variety of different ways. I'm, I guess, old-fashioned, like I think some in the United States still are. I believe in the construct of comparative advantage. I believe trade is a good thing and that more trade is a better thing, that integrating economies is good economically and makes sense by virtue of economic theory, but also tends to reduce the likelihood of armed conflict. And for all the reasons that I think have traditionally been embraced by presidents of both parties, congresses of both parties, and so on, I still believe that the largest and second largest economies in the world ought to work together, ought to leverage their complementarities, ought to leverage their respective comparative advantages, ought to trade, ought to be open to all lawful and job-creating investment. And I still think those things are good things for this country. And I think that the reason the United States became the economic powerhouse that it has become and did become over the last several decades is because we did all of those things. I think turning our back on those ideas that contributed mightily to America's rise as an economic player and as a superpower is a very unwise thing to do and a very short-sighted thing to do.
Make sure you're with us tomorrow for part two of Lori London's interview with David Feierstein.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. More than 500 garment factories in Bangladesh that supply to global brands reopened Monday after a month-long shutdown to curb the spread of the coronavirus, while India considered ways to scale back its vast lockdown to reduce economic pain. Bangladesh is home to around 4,000 garment factories employing 4.1 million workers. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. An executive order from President Trump issued last week and enacted last Friday restricts legal immigration to the United States for 60 days. Before signing the order, the U.S. president cited the need to protect American workers and preserve U.S. health care resources during the COVID-19 pandemic. This executive order suspends lawful permanent resident visas, commonly referred to as green cards, for most family members of U.S. citizens and permanent residents who currently live outside the United States and do not have a valid visa or travel document. According to the White House, the order does not block people coming to the U.S. on temporary visas for work or travel. The order does not cover non-immigrant visa holders, such as those working in the agricultural field. The ban also doesn't apply to healthcare or medical research professionals, including workers with H-1B visas, a category that allows more than 85,000 highly skilled foreigners to come to the U.S. to work for at least 3 years. Many in U.S. Asian communities are not happy with the move. I spoke with John Wang, president and executive director of Asian Americans Advancing Justice. What was your original reaction to President Trump saying he was going to go through with a ban on immigration?
My first reaction was one of outrage, but then I realized that he was just doing now what Congress has prevented him from doing for the last 3 years, which is to gut the modern American immigration system. And he's just using the COVID-19 as an excuse for doing so. And in doing that, he also is conveniently trying to, again, shift the blame for COVID-19 response and what we've seen here in the United States.
They came out with many, many exceptions to this rule. Did that placate you at all?
To be honest, not really, no. Because, again, he's gutting the system, especially when it comes to family immigration. Other than for spouses and children under 21, anyone else that is a relative that otherwise would have been allowed to come here, this includes parents, this includes siblings, this includes adult children, are no longer able to get a visa to come here. And that's unacceptable for our immigration system.
What can be done? Is there anything that can be done? And are you glad that he has put possibly limitations on this?
Certainly, I think a number of organizations will be looking at lawsuits. Certainly, we are going to be appealing to Congress. You are right that on one hand, it is an executive order that I believe is for 60 days. But we also know what he did with the Muslim ban, which nominally was for a 120-day period as he examined the security consequences with respect to those particular countries. And we're 3 years into this ban, and we are very concerned that if this president is allowed to continue, he would continue to use this executive order to get his way on immigration.
What does this mean for immigrants from Asia?
It's devastating. About 65% of immigration from Asia or visas from Asia rely on the family-based system. Again, we're talking about the siblings, the adult children, and the parents. But we're also talking about worker visas, from my understanding of this executive order, whether it's H-1B or otherwise. And so what we're talking about here is really cutting immigration from Asia by a dramatic amount. And that's why we view this also as being extremely xenophobic and pursuing an agenda that is what we would consider to be white nationalist. He is trying to create a version of America that didn't exist since the 1920s.
What about the reaction to that we have to protect our borders from the coronavirus?
Well, if we're talking about the health aspect of it, medical and health experts agree that we already have enough community spread here that the question is how do we effectively test and how do we effectively treat COVID-19? Trying to so-called seal off the borders from immigrants is going to do nothing to alleviate that stress in our system. Now, to be clear, I am not a doctor. I'm not a medical expert on this. But from my understanding, all medical experts would agree that structuring immigration systems like this will not solve the problem here in the United States.
This broadcast goes to many English speakers and many, many English learners all throughout Asia. What is your message to them?
My message to English speakers in Asia is that the United States is a country that does still believe in immigration, that we do believe in all sorts of different types of immigrants and the value that immigrants bring to the United States. Notwithstanding executive orders like this, Americans as a whole are better than that.
I thank you, John. Take care. Here's a message from your friends at VOA Asia. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you can't wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses. VOA Asia, always looking out for you. Developing at this hour in Asia, the Hubei Province Health Commission said Wuhan, the city at the center of China's coronavirus outbreak, has no more hospitalized patients after the last 12 were discharged. Patients remain hospitalized elsewhere in China, including 67 in Shanghai and 3 in Beijing. Many cities have seen an influx of cases from overseas, prompting the government to sharply curtail international flights and entry. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Twitter and Facebook at VOA Asia. Health workers are, of course, the first responders in the coronavirus outbreak, but quarantine makes unlikely heroes from balcony musicians to neighbors delivering each other's groceries. As VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, calming furry animals may be the next heroes the world needs.
Far from their native South American habitat, these alpacas are saving the day for Germans suffering coronavirus-related stress.
A heartfelt welcome to the alpaca farm.
Frank Messing owns a farm in Elbville, Germany. On it live more than 100 alpacas and llamas working as therapy animals. The virus shut down visits back in March, so Messing went digital.
Man, we had no guests and no revenue. Putting our heads together isn't exactly our thing. So we developed a platform with a digital company where people can book our animals for video calls.
Messing says the animals radiate calm, making them popular with therapy groups.
If you look Joanne in the eyes, you become calmer. Stress isn't the order of the day, and that comes through in video calls. Calm down. Just relax a bit.
Messing's video conferencing IT manager, Stefan Nachtstein, says the new normal of online everything brought this idea to life.
My friend's daughter is taking classes and language lessons online, so we said the alpaca farm could also work. We called Frank. He was into the idea, so we got it up.
Online meetings and dinners have been reality since quarantines began. With farms like Messing's, animal therapy now joins that list. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
In 2018, a pair of astronomers discovered that an asteroid sharing Jupiter's solar orbit, but doing so in the opposite direction, was not originally a part of our solar system. Helena Mordice of the Sao Paulo State University and Fatih Namouni from the French National Center for Scientific Research determined the asteroid formed around another star, which billions of years ago resided in the same cluster as our sun. The scientists suggested that the relatively closeness of the stars at the time, along with their and their planet's gravitational forces, allowed for the exchange of asteroids from each other's systems. In a new study published in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, the two astronomers have identified a population of 19 asteroids with interstellar origins, orbiting the sun between our solar system's giant planets. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And find us at voanews.com. Thank you for being with us. And thanks to our managing director, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, including Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Have a wonderful day ahead.